Morning, everyone. The Senate E-12 Finance Division will come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 11, 2014. We have five bills before us this morning. First is Senate File 2019, Senator Saxhog, addressing the Headwaters Science Center. Senator Saxhog.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you mentioned, today I'm presenting Senate File 2019. This is a bill authorizing a grant to the Headwaters Science Center in Bemidji. Senate File 2019 appropriates $50,000 in 2015 to the Headwaters Science Center for hands-on science, technology, engineering, and math education. And with me today is Susan Joy, the director of the Headwaters Science Center, and she's going to give some brief testimony and answer any questions. You'll have to ask them. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms.
Welcome,
Ms.
Joy.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Saxhog, and thank you, Chairman Wieger, for inviting me here down to speak today. The Headwaters Science Center has been in Bemidji for 20 years.
Excuse me, Mr. Wieger, for the tape, just state your name again.
Susan Joy, Director of Headwaters Science Center.
Thank you.
The Headwaters Science Center has been in existence for 20 years. In fact, we celebrated our 20th birthday party on Saturday with a community event that drew over 850 people. We offer hands-on science education through our exhibit floor, outreach programs, educational demonstrations. We serve over 17 counties, as shown in the handout. The majority of our school visitors do come from Beltrami, Cass, and Hubbard counties. Every year, approximately 25,000 people come through our doors. That includes visitors, members, school kids, outreach programs that we do, partnerships with 4-H Robotics, Boys and Girls Club, homeless shelters. We believe that barriers to STEM education should not exist, whether those barriers are socioeconomic, race, gender, or national origin. $50,000 is a lot of money for us, but it's money that would be invested directly into a rural part of Minnesota that often gets left behind. And I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Ms. Joy. Questions from committee? Okay. Senator Saxhog, any additional testifiers?
Clearly, it's a need that's been addressed. As you say, Mr. Chairman, this is pretty straightforward. And as Ms. Joy says, this is a part of Minnesota, the Bemidji area, that you wouldn't think that it has a lot of minorities, but three Indian reservations Bemidji as kind of their center for this type of thing. And I think it's proved itself. It's a very important part of this particular part of the state.
Excellent. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 2019? If not, Senator Saxhog and Ms. Joy, thank you very much. We will be laying this over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And we appreciate your testimony and service to the people in your area and sharing how successful it has been.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you,
Senator Saxhog. And we'll lay that over. Is Senator Lori? Okay. Yes. Welcome, Senator Lori. And we will go next to Senate File 2426, Debt Equalization for School Districts Experiencing Natural Disaster. And there's an author's amendment that we're going to distribute. Senator Lori?
Yeah, that'd be the A1 amendment. Bring it into shape, Mr. Chair.
And if any testifiers that you have would like to join you now, that
sure
be appropriate. Senator Lori moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 2426. This is the first stop.
Somebody else better actually move it.
Senator Johnson, yeah. Okay. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Lori, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, like you said, this is an additional levy aid for school districts that experience a natural disaster. Senate File 2426 is consistent with recommendations coming out of the Facilities Funding Working Group. Superintendent Endahar was actually chair of that working group. I was just talking with co-chair. I was just talking with Leroy Stumpf about it this morning a little bit. This group worked very hard on a lot of these recommendations. Essentially, it would cover debt incurred by a district as a result of a natural disaster not covered by FEMA or insurance payments that exceeds $500,000. And the goal is to increase the equalization aid significantly for districts with these natural disasters. The threshold for equalization is lowered from the current. It'd be 10% of adjusted net tax capacity versus the 15.74, and the equalization levy is level is also higher than current law. Section 3 is the appropriation, and sections 4 and 5 are technical. And with that, I probably will open it up to our testifiers. I do think we have a couple of handouts, if we could get a page or something to make.
Yes, Aaron, right, we will get that. And we're looking now, we don't have a fiscal note. I'm wondering if Superintendent Indahar knows, was this included in terms of fiscal impact in the work group report?
Actually, I was talking to Mr. Melcher yesterday. I thought maybe they would have something, so I'm unclear.
I'm sure it's in progress. We just wanted to have something before us if we do, but you know, there's time.
Yeah. I just had a note that there was no fiscal note available at this time as well. So
okay. Forthcoming. Okay. So the material is being distributed. Please proceed, Sarah.
With that, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Indahar.
Mr. Chair,
welcome back.
I'm Bob Indahar. I'm the superintendent at Moose Lake. Mr. Ehler and myself have been asked this question repeatedly. Why would two schools come to the legislature and ask for money to help build new buildings? Many schools have facility needs. They seem to be able to solve their own problems. Why Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson? I kind of want to tell our story today. You know, communities are supposed to take care of their own facility needs, don't they? I'd like to say that if all things were equal, communities would decide on their own facility needs, but things are not equal. Our system has got to the point where there are winners and losers in state facility financing. Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson are a dramatic example of schools that are on the losing end of facility finance spectrum. I had Ehlers run me some numbers. I'm not going to bore you with everything that I've got, but the bottom line is if we compare apples to apples and we pass a bond, we pay $670 in Moose Lake. The property-rich districts pay $10. And to me, that's just offensive, but the bottom line is that's just one piece of the story, and you already know that piece of the story. Imagine having this disadvantage and then throw a flood into this situation, which damages an 80-year-old building and devastates a third of the community. We are very thankful for what you did for us, by the way. You allowed us to get FEMA dollars, and our school was put back together so that we could run school that next year. That is very much appreciated. However, the problems we had before the flood got exaggerated. Our poor tax base was eroded even further. We are required to pay extra money for flood insurance. You know, they told me that students would leave Moose Lake because of the flood, and I did not believe them. And you give out a little bit of extra money because you know that. Because I kept thinking, well, where are they going to go? They did leave. There was about 30 kids who left our district. And then just the long-term effects of the flood that we're dealing with right now. Right now, about every 6 feet in the basement of our building, there's vertical cracks going down. We have the plumbing in our building is old. Just this week, I had to take out two water fountains because the plumbing no longer works in it. We are experiencing some side effects of the flood with mold. As we experience them, we deal aggressively with it because we know what the public perception is of a school that goes through a flood. The list goes on and on. And our citizens are still trying to recover financially. making the passing of our bond even more difficult. Our board feels that it is a bad idea to pour $10 to $15 million into an old, inefficient building, and has been trying for the last decade to figure out a solution for building a new building. With open enrollment, education is a competitive business. Three districts which touch our border all received special funding so that they could build their buildings. They have newer buildings, and Moose Lake has the district with the old flooded building. We know that people coming to our community take a look at the buildings and choose to put their children in a newer building without looking into the educational advantages that Moose Lake provides. The big 25 districts in the state all have access to millions of dollars that we do not have access to, and there are many schools throughout the state that have received millions of dollars in special grants to help with their special needs in facility financing. To say the state does not give special consideration to individual schools is not accurate. I would say the opposite. When a school is in need, the state comes through. We don't want to be here before you asking for money, but we are forced to because we have nowhere else to turn. I want to be clear that in Moose Lake, we are looking to build a new building if we can pass a bond. We would like to get out of our old, inefficient building and take away the chance of getting flooded again. We own 180 acres on high ground. With the cards stacked against us like this, it makes it virtually impossible for us to pass a bond in Moose Lake. We are asking that you put us on a level playing field with other schools and give us a fighting chance. Just on a related note, the recommendations from the Facility Finance Working Committee would go a long way to creating more equity in our system in Minnesota. If you read the recommendations, you will notice what we are asking for in this particular bill is similar to what's in the recommendations for schools that go through a natural disaster. I would encourage the implementation of these recommendations during this session. I believe you would have a good solution to schools like Rushford, Peterson, and Moose Lake if, God forbid, another school goes through a flood. I would like to end on a positive note. Educationally, Moose Lake is strong. On the MCAs, we are consistently one of the highest scoring schools in the area in math and reading. Our football team is a force to be reckoned with. We have not lost a regular season game in 7 years. Our band and choir repeatedly win state awards. We do an excellent job of educating our children. We are proud of our school and staff for producing such a high-quality product each year. Moose Lake educates well-rounded students that thrive after they graduate. We are not looking for your pity. We are looking for you to put us on a level playing field with other schools with regards to facility financing. Our citizens expect to pay their fair share to upgrade our facilities, and this bill allows them to do that. Thank you for considering our bill.
Thank you very much, Superintendent DeHaar.
Good morning, Chairman Wigger and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity this morning to talk to you a little bit about Rushford Peterson. And as Superintendent DeHaar has already indicated to you, Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson are sister school districts. They happen to be in the Northeast, and we happen to be in the Southeast. We were flooded in 2007, and they were flooded in 2012, so there's 5 years. Each of the school districts experienced similar damages. Theirs was in close to $1 million in damages, and so was Rushford Peterson. We were fortunate and blessed that FEMA did assist us. However, I want the committee to know that our request was for those FEMA dollars to allow us to use those dollars to go towards building a new facility. Our facilities consist of the main structure, which was built in 1906, by the way, which is older than the Titanic, and 1936, 1957, 1958, and we also have a middle school that was built in 1953, 1959, and then final addition was built in 1968. So needless to say that we are dealing with facilities that have run their course over time. I'm in my 7th year as a superintendent at Rushford Peterson Schools. I arrived at the school district in July and experienced that flood firsthand in August of 2007. We are still dealing with the impact from that flood. Our community was devastated by that, and we were fortunate to receive funding and assistance from the state of Minnesota that helped our business community. Over 90% of the business community was impacted, and many of our homeowners in that area were required to take out additional loans and mortgages to make it through and to refinance their homes. As I indicated, our school district suffered close to $1 million in damages, and today we're experiencing still some of those things as a result of the flood. When a flood occurs, you can see everything that occurs on the surface. Nobody knows what's going on underneath. And for us, we are seeing some structural issues as far as our walls, as far as our plumbing issues, and as far as other just unrelated issues that impact the structural integrity of our buildings. So each day is a challenge for us. We are constantly challenged with equipment that's not going to be operational. We've had sewer lines that have rusted through and broken. We've had heating lines that have broken. And we have ceiling plaster that continues to fall on a daily basis. And our facilities are, at this point, functionally unable to provide what we would consider a quality and safe educational environment. As Superintendent Indahar indicated to you, one of the things that we suffer is the impact that the tax would have on our community. If we were to move forward with the building of our facility, our new facility, we're anticipating somewhere in excess of $32 million for this to happen. We've asked the state repeatedly since 2008 to assist us with this. We also have a bonding request out there for $20 million. So as Superintendent Indahar indicated to you, we're asking our citizens as well to step forward. But on that note, even with that assistance from the state, we would still see a 23% increase in local referendums that would be required of our taxpayers. We've worked with Ehlers and Associates, and Greg Crow is here today to verify our data. And simply, as Bob indicated, we want to be put on a level playing field. We've simply exhausted and explored all avenues that are available to help support us financially. So as you can see and hear today, both school districts have a critical situation. Both of us have compelling needs. And every effort has been taken by both school districts to ensure that we are providing a safe learning environment for our students. So we implore you to carefully analyze our critical needs for a new facility, to include our request as part of the funding recommendations that you will be bringing forward as a part of this committee. And we want you to know that the safety and the future of our school districts are depending on you. From research and experience, we know what makes a strong school. All schools need quality teaching, capable leadership, and up-to-date facilities. In addition to these characteristics, we need equitable and sufficient funding to provide up-to-date facilities that are essential for us to continue. As Bob indicated to you, both school districts have a strong record and indication that we are doing an excellent job. Test scores prove it. Involvement in our community. We are providing a quality education. On a closing note, I wish to share with the committee that Rushford Peterson's school motto is always our best. So we are counting on you to do your best and include our request for financial support. We want you to know that there is a desperate need for that. It would be one of the most important investments that you can make that would have a long-term impact on the lives of our children. In any community, the strength of a school system is closely tied to the vitality of the community, and we'd like that opportunity to prove that to you. So on behalf of Rushford Peterson and the Moose Lake School Districts, we hope that you will give serious consideration to our request today. Thank you for allowing me to be here today and to share our story with you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Sir, so, Mr. Chair, let me just kind of summarize. So what we have here is really the convergence of three factors. In both of these districts, we have incredibly aging facilities that we're already having a hard time meeting the needs of the youth in these areas. Combined with very, very low property wealth that made it nearly impossible to pass a referendum And then the third factor was a natural disaster, unforeseen, that, you know, flooded both of these facilities, further eroding property values, you know, frankly, trapping people in their houses. You can't sell these houses that have been through a flood, and the values just aren't there, and putting that referendum that much further out of reach. And it creates a completely untenable situation, and we just have to find some way to help districts in this dire situation. And we've got two of them now, Rushford Peterson, since 2007. We haven't been able to find that solution to help them through, and now Moose Lake. So this is one proposal. Superintendent Ellers mentioned that we do have a bonding proposal as well. We're just working very, very hard to try to figure out a way that the state can be a partner and help these struggling districts through this difficult situation.
Thank you, Senator Lori. Was there one additional witness, Greg Crow, or is that for as a resource if there's questions of him? Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Greg Crow. I'm a financial advisor at Ellers & Associates. I don't need to offer testimony. I'd like to be here to help as you're asking questions about the financial implications potentially of the bill and support the superintendent and the author.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lori, can you describe the school districts, number of students, and are your communities growing, or what's going on in the area?
Well, I'm gonna let the superintendents give the authoritative answer to that.
Okay.
Superintendent, into her.
Chair and representative, Moose Lake is at about 620.
Senator Johnson.
What did I say?
I was representative.
You're,
no, I saw fine. Senator, and what came out of my mouth was representative. Very good. Sorry, a little nervous.
No,
so we have about 620 students in Moose Lake. We are down slightly because of the flooding. As I said, we were down about 30 kids. We think that we are stabilizing at this point in time, but that's where we're at right now.
And that's a
K-12 facility.
And I believe there was testimony, too, that sometimes people, they'll move just for another opportunity. I saw that in another situation when I was on a school board where if there was a great deal of angst, concern about the stability of a district where people will just vote by walking. And the lack of long-term action may be reflected in that decline as well. Perhaps.
And Mr. Chair, I want to make it really clear. I'm very, very interested in trying to support a school district such as yours with your facilities. I think it's unusual. In fact, I wrote down, why do large districts have access to funds and what kind of funds do they access? I asked both people on either side of me and, you know, wondering why small schools should not be allowed to use the same provisions that are there for large schools, because all of you are doing the same thing. You're providing a safe place for children, and I would guess if I were living in that area, I would be concerned about mold for my children if I were going to send them there. So I'm very, very supportive to try to find a way to help you, and wondering, would you, if you had equalization, could you pass a levy?
Superintendent?
Chair and Senator. We did, part of my calculations that I didn't want to bore you with was even if we get the triple equalization that we're looking for, we would, in Moose Lake, we'd pay $100 more than the average community with decent tax base. So what we're asking for isn't obscene. As a matter of fact, we would probably pay more than most districts, but it would help significantly. We did a survey in our community, got strong response from it. I know what the number is where I could possibly pass a bond.
Mm-hmm.
This would get us to that number.
And in Moose Lake, one of the reasons the tax capacity is so low is that 70% of the land mass is non-taxable. We have a prison in the sex offender program, several churches, a state park, a hospital, nonprofit. You know, I mean, 70% of the land mass is not on the tax rolls. And so it just becomes out of reach.
And if I may add, Chairman Wieger and Senator Johnson, and Senators today, one of the things that challenges Rushford-Peterson is that we are in Fillmore County. Fillmore County is one of the poorest counties in southeastern Minnesota. And again, for us to generate that tax is just a huge impact within our community. For Rushford-Peterson, our enrollment is very similar to Moose Lake. We have 640 students. That's a kindergarten through 12 center. We are looking at, again, as we indicated, efforts to move forward to replace our current facilities. We went out with a bond referendum in 2012, attempted to do what was called a phase-in project to build a early childhood through fifth center. Unfortunately, we were not able to generate enough support for that. What we gleaned from that, from our community, is that they wanted a one and done. And, of course, for us to go out and ask them to support a 48% tax impact is not going to happen within our community.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick questions. Senator Lurie, I presume that at some point in time, based on the dates, this would also cover the areas that were affected by the floods last summer that we passed special aid to during the special session. Those would eventually qualify under this bill as well.
The special, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, the special session that we had last year was largely wind disaster.
You're right.
This was the flood from the year before.
You're right.
And this is the district that was in that flood.
Okay.
Yep.
Senator Pratt, follow up.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Senator Lurie. You're absolutely right. I forgot about that. Is there anything in this bill that requires it? I've been scanning through it only for flood related items, or is the idea that what kind of constraints are there to make sure that the debt equalization is going specifically to flood and not other projects?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, my understanding of the way this is structured is that it would be for any natural disaster that's not covered either by FEMA or by insurance. And so, like, in Wadena, we had a school district destroyed by a tornado that came through. But that was covered by insurance. And so this wouldn't cover that instance. We were able to build a new school after that natural disaster. So it's really when I'm trying to remember. Maybe it wasn't Wadena. What was it? It was a W Minnesota something. Where, but this would be for any natural disaster with damages not covered by either FEMA or insurance in excess of $500,000. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be a flood, but flood is the one that there's two districts that would qualify today.
Senator Lurie, Mr. Arneson has some additional insight perhaps on that question.
It would be helpful.
Mr. Chair and members, beginning this bill would be retroactive to the 1st of January 2005, and since that date, in Minnesota, there have been 19 major disaster declarations that would potentially qualify for these funds under Section 2, Paragraph A, Clause 1. I don't have data on whether any of these 19 disasters, beyond the one that the testifiers are speaking to today, caused more than $500,000 in damages.
Mr. Chair, more than $500,000 in damages not covered
to school districts. To the school district.
Yes, to the school district. I think is how it's supposed to be.
Mr. Ernst.
Mr. Chair, members, it might be something to double check. The way I read it is that the natural disaster in total cost $500,000 or more, and that and that the repair replacement costs aren't covered. So I think those two conditions aren't necessarily so closely tied together as you understand.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is where the fiscal note would have been handy. We could see what the Department of Education, how they linked those two. I guess it was our intent to link them. That was what we were trying to do, and I think that, you know, I think that it was intended to isolate these two throughout the history. And if the fiscal note comes back and we haven't done that, you know, I guess we would get to work with you on a technical basis and see if we could fix it and make that link a little bit more explicit.
That'll be done. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one last question. Mr. Crow, has Ehlers done any sort of estimate about how many districts could be impacted by this legislation and what the total cost to districts, not worrying about the state share, but what the total cost of projects might be?
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, we are only aware of these two districts that would fall under this, but that doesn't mean there are others. Thinking back, I can't think of any that would necessarily qualify. And as far as the cost, we're estimating now that the additional equalization aid for the two districts is about $1.2 million each. On the debt schedules that we've prepared for them, you know, with the interest rates assumptions and the terms that we've, you know, the length of the loan and the terms of the loan. And but beyond that, we're not aware of any other districts that would qualify.
Thank you.
Further questions, comments from the committee? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify?
Chairman Wigger, I would like to introduce my board chairperson, John Linder. He'd like to say a few words this morning.
Please. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Linder, chairman of the Rushford-Peterson School Board. I wanted to just briefly give you an update date on the tax situation. As there's been discussion, the impact on the community has been significant in the Rushford-Peterson district, and there is, as with a natural disaster, floods are not normally covered by insurance. The tax base of the community has suffered. A lot of people have had to refinance their homes in order to stay in them, and that has a direct impact on our ability to raise funds. The other factor is that there's very little industrial base in our community. It's significant farmland, and the way the current law is structured, the very adversely affect the farmland, the farm owners. And even though farming has been relatively good the last few years, most farmers realize that over a 20 or 30 year period of a bond, there could be some significant downturns. So it makes it a little more reluctant to commit to the funding, which just has a very significant impact on ag land. And we that's really all we have for a tax base. So the schools are really in dire need in both communities of support. And we'd appreciate you know, the opportunity to express our concerns to you and for your time today.
Thank you, Chair Linder, and for your service. Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the flood 2 years ago, did Moose Lake receive any money from FEMA?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Linder.
Senator Stumpf. Yes, we did. We received about $750,000 in FEMA dollars, and I think we got like about $50,000 to $60,000 worth of insurance. And so, again, that was greatly appreciated. It was a miracle that we got the school back and running. But our issue is much greater than the immediate impact. It's the long-term impact of that flood that we're looking at right now.
Sure. Just a couple more questions. It was my understanding that if FEMA, comes through with some funding, that they usually don't have They usually want you out of the floodplain. Otherwise, you know, you're basically reinvesting money in could be another incident where flooding takes place. So is the current location for the school in the floodplain, or is it? It must be because it got flooded.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, it's not in the current floodplain maps.
And that's how
they're not going to update those maps for several years. And so while, you know, any reasonable view of the situation, you know, you look at the picture on this handout, I mean, could this happen again? You have to say yes. But they're not updating those maps for several years. When they update them, I mean, it's widely recognized this will be considered part of the floodplain.
Mr. Chairman and members, the other thing that's happening, since I represent an area that gets flooded quite often, is the FEMA has, and I think it's FEMA, but anyway, the flood insurance that homeowners are required to purchase if they are in a floodplain or take the risk of not being covered. One example was for a resident that was paying, let's say, $1,300 and some dollars a year. That has gone up to somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 a year. So, and that's in response to not so much the flooding up in Minnesota, but to large floods like East Coast and New Orleans and things like that. So it's quite costly for to have flood insurance, and it would be much better to, you know, get out of that floodplain, even though you're not in it, quote, right now.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lurie, you said you had to purchase flood insurance even though you aren't in the floodplain?
Superintendent Indahar?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, we were required. When you receive FEMA dollars, you have to take out flood insurance. So that's part of the criteria of getting those dollars.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Well, Senator Lurie, you made an excellent case. We're going to have additional testimony on the next two bills regarding the need for facility financing, not based on one zip code, but that we have equal opportunity throughout the state in the spirit of the Constitution. You give us a very poignant reminder as to how we are falling far short of that goal. There's different options that we'll be considering. Now, you know, Senator Stumpf and bonding, we'll see what potential supplemental money we have, but there clearly something needs to be done. That's not an acceptable situation. It was noted the need for the fiscal note, which is in progress, and over the next several days we'll be looking very closely at that. So we thank you very much and your witnesses for your testimony. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and senators.
And Senator Stumpf moves that we lay Senate File 2426, or that we move that Senate File 2426 be included for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Senator Dahl, Senate File 2117, followed by 2282. Does he have an amendment? Senator Dahl, I believe you have two authors' amendments.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I believe it's the A1 and the A2. Okay,
they're in the packets, and we'll move each one. The first stop, Senator Dahl moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Dahl moves the A2. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, basically what the author's amendments do is to fill in the dollar amounts. That at least the A1 amendment fills in the per pupil amount there on line 15. And then on the A2 amendment, we just included the intermediate districts, a few intermediate districts to make sure that they're also included in this particular piece of legislation. I attended the joint session of the House and Senate, I guess that was last week, and I thought they did an excellent job of giving the school facilities financing working group recommendations, and I learned a lot about the bills that I'm carrying and the reason for these particular bills. I thought that, that task force did a great job in showing some of the inequities that we have and maybe also how we could be looking long-term at addressing some of the issues that you maybe just heard, but also allowing schools a little more flexibility in how they spend the dollars that they need for things like health and safety and accessibility improvements, security improvements, deferred maintenance, and so forth. The facilities working group made several proposals to revamp school funding laws, which would cost about $757 million over a three-year phase-in if all of the recommendations were put into motion. This particular bill that I'm carrying today, 2117, would require the governor in his fiscal year 16 and 17 biennial budget to include a recommendation to start the working group implementation process and appropriate $50 million over the first 2 years. It would allocate $53 per pupil unit amount for fiscal year 15 only for districts that are not included in the alternative facilities bonding program, which is based on a district building age and square footage. Currently, there are 24 school districts qualifying. Most of those are in the metro or large regional centers. This new per pupil funding could be used to pay for deferred maintenance, accessibility improvements, or to make fire safety or health repairs. If we based on what I learned last week, I think the alternative facilities qualifying districts earn about $510 per pupil unit, while those outside, which some of these would be eligible for, earn about $212 per pupil. So ultimately what this bill is hoping to do is to close that gap, also combining those areas of deferred maintenance, health, and safety as recommended by the task force. So I think I'll call the testifiers up, unless you have some specific questions that they probably can answer better than I, or Mr. Willems could maybe help as he did some runs on some of these numbers.
Yes, thanks, Senator Dahl. There is some handout material runs for various school districts as to what this would do. And as you noted, we had a joint hearing last week with the overview on the bill as well from Dr. Melcher, others serving. So you know, at this time, we would be happy to hear from your testifiers.
If Superintendent Jeff Ronenberg is here, he could come up. Sam Walseth, like come up. We'll let you.
And Senator Dahl, I'm going to ask Mr. Wilms to offer a few thoughts as your witnesses approach.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the total cost of this proposal is $25,421,000. The district runs look like this. They should be in your committee packet. Aid is paid to 305 districts. And note that this is on an entitlement basis, so the actual appropriation will be smaller than the $25 million. As I stated earlier, the amount to intermediate districts, which is not included in this data run, is $740,000. And again, that's on an entitlement basis, so the appropriation will be smaller.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to offer some comments, and thank you to Senator Dahl for bringing this important bill forward. I'm going to be brief. I did testify last week at your joint hearing and told you how enthusiastically we support the recommendations from that school facilities financing work group. And Senator Dahl is bringing forward a key piece of that, extending the alternative facilities authority to all school districts. That program is an outstanding program. The districts that participate in that will tell you that. It allows them to protect their taxpayer investments, maintain safe learning environments for students, for staff, really for all community members, because we all know that your entire community uses your school buildings. So it's important to keep that in mind, that this is really a, you know, the entire community benefits when we have safe school buildings. I would just like to note, and we thank Senator Dahl for the amendment to include intermediate districts. We just want to check and make sure that joint powers districts would be covered by that as well. We do have the West Metro Education Program, for example, that has two public school buildings that enrolls hundreds of students and employs many staff. So we'll work with Senator Dahl and staff as that goes forward just to make sure that we're protecting all of our public school facilities buildings. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to turn it over to Superintendent Jeff Ronneberg from Spring Lake Park, who can give you more of a really a school district perspective on this bill.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. As Scott said, my name is Jeff Ronneberg, and I am the superintendent of the Spring Lake Park School District. I have been in the district for 15 years now, the past five as superintendent. For those of you who may not be aware, Spring Lake Park serves 5,500 students serving families in the communities of Blaine, Fridley, and Spring Lake Park in the North Metro. We are bordered by Anoka-Hennepin to the west and north, Fridley to the south, and Mounds View Schools to the east. We are a growing district. Enrollment has increased by over 30% in the past 10 years, and we expect to increase by another 15 to 20% in the next 8 years or so, growing from 3,800 students just a few years ago to over 6,200 students in just a few short years. While growing in total enrollment, we are also seeing a more diverse student body with more varied and unique needs than ever before. About 40% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. Over 20% of our students speak a first language other than English, and nearly 40% of our students are non-white. I love the opportunity to lead a school system that is so rich in diversity, yet we are seeing more and more students and their families living in crisis. So you may be wondering, what does that have to do with school facilities? Well, in February 2006, the taxpayers of Spring Lake Park generously approved a bond of nearly $100 million to fund a comprehensive facilities plan to address deferred maintenance needs and projected enrollment growth. This bond supported the building of a new elementary school in Blaine, significant updating and remodeling of every school and classroom in the district, including knocking down and rebuilding 75% of our high school. It was a very exciting time for our school district. However, despite the community support and investment, there were numerous needs that were not able to be accomplished because of the necessity to fund significant deferred maintenance projects that the district had not been able to fund over time. In addition to this 2006 bond, we added another 16 classrooms as well as expanded kitchen and cafeteria space at two of our elementary schools this past summer in order to manage current enrollments. While we were planning these additions, over the past couple of years, we conducted an extensive study of facilities, resulting in the development of a 10-year master programming and facilities plan that we presented to our school board last spring. The intention of this study was to proactively manage projected enrollment growth and, more importantly, protect our community members' significant investment in our school facilities so they meet and exceed expected life cycles. This master facilities plan identified all necessary maintenance projects in the next decade, as well as anticipated costs for each. We have developed financing options for these projects. We are able to manage these in the near term, but as we move 3 years out and more, it becomes a real challenge. As I work with our staff in forecasting our budget with a 5 to 8 year view, we have set aside $800,000 to $1.4 million out of our general fund on an annual basis to fund routine necessary maintenance. The challenge is that this allocation of resources is the equivalent of approximately 13 to 23 teaching positions in a given year. Strategy and leadership is all about allocating resources, human, time, and fiscal, where impact is greatest. We work purposefully as a leadership team, board, and administration with a long-term view at investing these resources for change and improvement. In addition, our employee groups have been outstanding partners as they have participated in long-term budget forecasting as well. That being said, while we want to maintain our facilities, there will come a time in the not-so-distant future when we'll be faced with the decision, a new roof or teaching positions. It is a decision that school districts across the state face, and it leads to a bond like we had in 2006 that was nearly $100 million, not because of enrollment growth, but because of the need to address deferred maintenance projects that were not able to be completed over time. We do not want to be in such a position again. However, allocating our resources towards the maintenance of facilities when our neighboring districts are able to access alternative financing for maintenance of facilities leads to a real inequity. The 24 districts with this capacity are able to invest that $800,000 to $1.4 million that we have set aside for roofs and parking lots into educational investments to fund strategies to improve student learning. In addition, because we have to go to our community to fund deferred maintenance through voter-approved bonds, it becomes difficult for us to go back to them again to increase our levy, a levy that is well below that of our neighboring districts. This is not a unique situation we are in. Districts across the metro and the state face similar situations. Finally, I also saw later on your agenda you'll be talking about the review and comment process. Just want to quickly say this is a process that needs refinement. Our additions this past summer not only required significant staff time to develop, the project start date was significantly delayed because MDE staff were not able to process our review and comment in the necessary timeline, causing us to delay the start of school. Wrapping up, I am proud of the innovation that I see taking place by the staff in our schools, innovation that is specifically focused on deepening the engagement and success of our students. I would much rather strategically invest our resources in the innovation and design of learning experiences necessary to meet our students' unique needs than to fund deferred maintenance projects. I urge you to support this bill and begin implementing the School Facilities Working Group recommendations. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent Ronberg. Mr. Walseth.
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We have 175 member districts, none of whom qualify for alternative facilities funding. And before I forget, I want to thank Senator Stumpf because I think it was last year marking up the E-12 bill, he offered an amendment that created that created the facilities task force that set forth this process.
And he served on that group as well. Maybe we'll hear more about that. Go ahead.
We hope we do. One stat that really caught our mind when the task force began its work was that districts who qualify for alternative facilities funding spend on average $2.79 per square foot on deferred maintenance. Those districts who don't, which are the other half of the student body in the state, spend only 58 cents on average per square foot for deferred maintenance. That's upwards of a 5-to-1 differential or ratio between what half the student body has for facilities and what the other half doesn't. In order to make this alternative facilities expansion viable, and we believe that is a very necessary step and one of the core things of this report, making alt facilities expansion viable is going to be equalization. You heard in the previous testimony on the other bill about Moose Lake and Rusher Peterson, some of the issues that greater Minnesota districts face in terms of tax base issues. We've got a lot of land that is not eligible for on the tax rolls. It's tied up depending on which tax base we're talking about. Ag production land sometimes is not on. Seasonal rec property is not on. Government property is not on. We have tax base issues in rural Minnesota that make it very difficult to just go out and levy the tax base against homeowners. So we do need equalization is going to be a major key to this puzzle. But we're here to fully endorse the recommendations of the report and to support Senator Dahl's bill as presented today. This is a key step forward in what we're considering closing the equity puzzle for kids in greater Minnesota. Facility needs compete directly with general fund obligations for programs for kids and much more heavily in the districts I'm representing. So, Mr. Chairman and members, we implore you to continue moving this bill forward. This is a major piece of the puzzle for achieving equity for kids in Minnesota. Thank you,
Mr. Walsett. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to take this opportunity because I wasn't able to attend the joint House-Senate hearing last week. But just to thank all of the different groups that participated, I mean, there's literally dozens and dozens and dozens of people representing different educational organizations. And in particular, I want to thank the Department of Education and especially Dr. Melcher, who used his many years of experience to actually dig out solutions that I think can be workable. And that's been a struggle for many, many years is how do you find solutions and then how do you get them passed? And so I think there's a lot of gratitude to so many people in this room and beyond that needs to be given. And I hope that this can be a turning point. You know, this legislation that Senator Dahl and others are carrying can be a turning point for helping our school districts across the state, many of them.
Thank you, Senator Stone. Brad Lundell, you for equity?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sam Walsh has said equity so many times, I think I might have to change my organization's name. But I also want to echo a lot of Senator Stump's comments that this discussion really is the hub of this discussion is the facilities work group. And I think the work that was done by that is a universal product that I think we all can endorse. And I've been on record of saying that at the Joint Committee last week, but I think it's very, very important that that serve as kind of the document that we work off as we move forward. The only thing I can add is I've talked to several superintendents over the last couple of weeks on this very issue, and there's a person who was an assistant superintendent in a district that did qualify for the alternative facilities is now the superintendent in a district that does not qualify, and he said, "I've been on both sides of the fence, and I like the other side of the fence better."
Yes.
I think that he saw firsthand the value of that alternative facilities program and what that meant, what that means to a district. I also talked to a superintendent whose experience as a school administrator began in Iowa, and his remark to me was that Iowa seems to do a lot better, concentrates on facilities a lot more than do in Minnesota. Now, I don't want to suggest that Iowa does a lot of things better than Minnesota, but I think it's one thing that we do need to look out at our facilities, and we do need to move forward and to make these things, part of the menu of things that are available to school districts. And I think that I want to thank Senator Dahl. A vast majority of we have a couple of districts in C that do participate in the alternative facilities program, but a vast majority do not. And we certainly see this as an important step forward in creating equity and creating safe and vibrant facilities and up-to-date facilities for students throughout the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Senator Barnoff.
Mr. Chair, I was at the joint hearing and I raised a question, and because Senator Stump wasn't there, I'm going to raise the question again because I'd actually like to get Senator Stump's comments. And that question was with regard to, he said, in the higher ed world, we do HEPR in our bonding bill. And so that, you know, serves a similar function as what we're talking about through the ALT facilities. And so I'm wondering if we've ever considered, in addition to doing local projects, having a state perspective and doing something similar to a HEPR but for our K-12 system so that we can actually have a process for making sure everybody, you know, takes advantage of the lower rates and use a formula, you know, akin to what like a MNSCU would do to decide where the priorities are based on need and et cetera.
If Senator Stumpf or Dr. Melcher wanted to comment
on
that.
He did comment there. But.
Well, if Mr. Chairman and Senator Barnoff, if your question would be is, should we be doing bonding at the state level for local districts, and in particular the general maintenance of local districts, I think the first thing that would be make it more difficult would be if you realize the bonding bill, you need a supermajority, even though I think almost everybody supports districts. The other problem that I've experienced since I've been chairing is that the consistency of the bonding process is not nearly, I think, as good as the local districts' efforts. The local districts know the needs so much better than we would know the needs at the state level. And then the inconsistency of we'll have a bonding bill one year and then it'll disappear the next year, and some big project will come in and gobble up our bonding authority, like football stadiums and bridges and what have you. So I think I think we need a much more steady process, like is being proposed here, where you'd use the local districts and use equalization and use alternative bonding as at the local level, which I think will prove itself out because of the testimony from those 24 districts. They seem to be happy with what's going on. And so that's just my
thank you.
Thinking.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that, or Senator Dames? And then we'll ask for any additional testifiers you can approach now. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to thank Senator Dahl and his co-authors for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a good bill. I think it's probably long overdue. I do have some concerns with a question. My concern is that I have several deep rural schools in my district. And I think it's fair to assume that the economy scales work in schools as they do in a lot of other applications, meaning that the larger the school, the less square footage per student that you're going to have. So when you get into some of my schools that are deep rural schools where they might have, I have one in here that has 54 students, I have one that has 100 students, you take a school with 100 students versus a school with 1,000 students, the square footage per student is going to be higher in 100 than 1,000. So with picking the per capita or the per student, we're actually not doing any favors to those small rural schools. And I guess that's one of my concerns. And my question is there some specific reason that we have used per student count versus square footage?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure exactly if there's any rationale that the working group came up with on that particular instance. I didn't serve on that particular group, but I would have to defer to someone else on that.
Dr. Melcher, on that, and I believe I didn't see any additional comment on from Mr. Walseth from the rural education perspective as to a need to change that, but shed some additional insight. Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The working group did use a per student measure. Certainly we know that the square footage varies among school districts, but ultimately we're looking at funding students and providing adequate education for students. We know that there are variations in square footage not only due to size of the district, but also due to whether the school district has right-sized their buildings and facilities for the numbers of students that they have. We know there are some school districts that have had a lot of declining enrollment over the years and for whatever reason have chosen to maintain some of the facilities that they have. And quite frankly, there could be some disincentive for maintaining the number of facilities that a district needs if we simply fund based on square footage. That would create an incentive to keep facilities open that we don't necessarily need to keep open. And so I think the feeling was that the per pupil kind of base is what we're really all about. Our general education funding is based on numbers of students. And so we recognize that there are some issues there, but that overall the consistency with the rest of the formulas we have would suggest a per pupil funding basis.
Just to follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's where my real concern lies. I was afraid of, is that we were trying to send a message to these small schools that we'd rather they would close so we didn't have to deal with them. And I think that that's really unfortunate. I do think that this is a good piece of legislation. I just am concerned the message we're sending to these small schools and small communities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And if there's a response that Mr. Walseth, we certainly don't want to send the wrong message. We're trying to help, and I believe the report is so. Mr. Walseth, on that,
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walseth with MREA, and just to try and clarify here a little bit, there are kind of two things going on. There's the task force report, which we're fully endorsing, and Senator Dahl has a bill that puts a down payment on that. and then calls for the continued phase in of all those recommendations. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dames, to your concern, at initial glance, yes, those smallest of schools aren't going to do well right off the bat with the down payment being put in, but over time, as the full facility recommendations are implemented as called for in the bill, they will do well. So it's Senator Dahl's creating a process here by which to launch the task force recommendations, and that down payment, while it doesn't create a lot of purchasing power immediately for those really small schools, over time with all those recommendations being implemented will help all those little districts as well. So
thank you. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on Senator Dames' comments. I think probably part of the problem is that as I was listening to the answer to Senator Dames' question was we wanted to talk about the number of facilities in a district. Well, most of my districts have a facility. So when you have a facility, regardless of when you have the declining enrollment, you have what you have, and that is what you have to provide the education to the children. And so that was just a concern I wanted to bring up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our next witness.
Thank you, Chairman Weger. My name is Paul Bourgeois. I'm the Executive Director of Finance and Operations for Minnetonka Public Schools. I also live in a district that does not have all facilities. I work in a district that does have it. And I was a member of the working group with Senator Stump and others in the place. I have just five quick points to make. Some of them are somewhat obvious, but I think it's important just to state them. In many communities, our school buildings are typically the most expensive public asset. There's been a significant dollar amount put into it by past generations. And you know, compared to most of the assets, even the city hall or the fire department, those types of things, it's really the most significant public investment that we have. You know, it's important that they don't look ostentatious, but that they do look in a state of good repair and have maybe somewhat of a stately look, because what goes on in the school is the most important thing, but the look of the facility, and it gives the first impression to a student that what goes on here is very important. And it helps to set the tone by having a facility in a state of good repair, that you don't have to put buckets out underneath the leaks of the roof every time it rains. So keeping facilities in a state of good repair, if you think about it over decades, it's actually the least expensive way to go for the most part. That's painting a little bit with a broad brush, but for the most part, most of our buildings, especially the ones built in the 50s and 60s for the baby boom generation, they were built very well. They have a lot of years of good life left in them if we continue to maintain them. I live in a district, or I work in a district that has no buildings that are more than younger than 48 years old. And they have many years of useful life left because we've been able to do the alternative facilities funding and enhance our buildings and keep them up to date. Our frame of reference, to replace those buildings would cost $500 million. That's just one district. So about 20 years ago, you did a very good thing when you approved the all facilities program. The 25 largest districts actually have about 44% of the students in the state in as their enrollment. So roughly 44% of the buildings, probably. And so, you know, we do have a situation where we're not starting from scratch on a statewide basis. We have a good start with that program that you put together 20 years ago. So it works very well. The school boards haven't gone wild. They're accountable to the taxpayers. And they use the money very judiciously. They want to keep their buildings in a state of good repair, and they exhibit good stewardship to their communities. So the real challenge is now we need to get the buildings in the other districts that house those other 56% of the students up to the same state of good repair. This bill does that. And so I guess I urge you to approve it, because it will allow all students to be housed in facilities that are at equal quality to the ones that we have in the 25 largest school districts that have all facilities.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify in Senate File 2117? If not, Senator Dahl, thank you very much for the excellent background and the support that's been generated. As you know, we'll be looking at the amount of potential supplemental money over the next several days, and then we'll see if we can make a down payment on something that is overdue. is interesting. On the news this morning, I had heard in Colorado, I'm not suggesting this here, but on the marijuana tax, that's going in part on the for school facility funding. And they talked about how it had gone on projection. Again, Senator Weber, we're not proposing.
No, I understand.
Really
I understand, okay. Mr. Chair. It's raising it to new highs. So anyway.
Okay. Senator Pratt, you went to University of Colorado.
That was good.
Okay. Time out. Okay. Senator Dahl, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move Senate File 2117 as amended for possible inclusion on the omnibus bill.
On that motion, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carried. Thank you, Senator Dahl. And related with the task force group report is Senate File 2282, and it's more policy but related to numbers on review and comment. Members, technically, it has not been referred to us from the policy committee, but with the understanding of Senator Torres Ray, with various stakeholders here with an interest, we thought we would hear that now and would not be able to take action, but we'll proceed as informational. Senate File 2282, review and comment modifications, again, included in that report. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, yes, recommendation number 7 on the facilities financing working group task force did recommend that we streamline the review and comment process. When a new school building is constructed or when an existing facility is substantially remodeled, a district incurs a substantial financial obligation that must be met immediately. School districts generally issue bonds to obtain the funds necessary to pay the contractors, and because of the importance and cost of major construction projects, the Department of Education provides a review and comment on each major project. Any school district that intends to construct an educational facility costing more than $500,000 must consult with the Commissioner of Education. The Commissioner may require a review and comment on the project. Any project that requires an expenditure of more than $1.4 million, except for certain deferred maintenance projects, must be submitted by the district to the Commissioner for review and comment. So this bill eliminates the need for a district to consult on a project of more than $500,000, raises the minimum qualifying expenditure necessary to trigger a review and comment from $1.4 million to $2 million. It also streamlines, in terms of the information required when they do reach that particular threshold, from 16 points down to 5. So, again, I think I heard last week of the testimony from Dr. Melcher that if we need new carpet for a library at the school library, we send a review and comment to the Department of Education, and where it goes from there, no one knows. I'm sure that they do an excellent job over there, but, you know, as the last testifier said, you know, it can hold up some projects, and who knows how many have ever actually been refused. So we're, I think, in keeping with the unsession and streamlining and so forth, I think this is, again, another excellent recommendation from the Finance Facilities Working Group. So I do have, I believe, Mark Bollinger, who is also one of the chairs of the task force, and I think maybe he'll go first.
Okay. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Weger and Senators. Appreciate the opportunity to speak on this. There were a total of 8 recommendations that were made last week, and all of them are very important. Today, I just wanted to focus in and support wholeheartedly the point on review and comment and those changes. I'd like for you to understand that on all 8 of the recommendations, the whole committee approved these recommendations and approved them unanimously. So we felt like that we did get a nice understanding among all the school districts, large or small. One of the things that I do want to point out, one of our principles in the facilities funding reform was that the funding formulas and administrative procedures be as simple as possible, minimize administrative burdens and paperwork, minimize local control while providing accountability. Last week, if you were there, and if you weren't, I would like to just repeat Dr. Melcher's overview, the recommendation of this one. That was to we would increase the dollar threshold for review and comment. We would eliminate the review and comment for projects funded entirely with long-term maintenance revenues, facility improvement revenue that you heard a little earlier, and operating capital revenue. Plus, this review reduces paperwork for remaining review and comments and eliminates the consultation requirements for smaller projects. I speak personally at Minneapolis Public Schools. It does this does create a bit of a burden internally. It takes a lot of time for us to put these together. Then I know that it also creates some burden at MDE as well. So we're asking that you support us and hopefully reducing some of that burden, some of the costs across the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bunker.
Thank you, Chairman Wieger. Paul Bourgeois, Executive Director of Finance and Operation for Minnetonka Public Schools and part of the Working Group Task Force. This component of the task force work will be beneficial to not only school districts, but probably also to the Department of Education. We know how they've been tasked with doing more and more with less and less the last several years. The big thing that also helps is it rationalizes the dollar amount. Nowadays, with current construction costs, you might be able to build 4 to 5 classrooms with $2 million. You can't build an elementary gymnasium. Those are $2.5 to $3 million. The bigger projects are still going to be under the typical review and comment process, and that's important to remember. But the other important thing is for projects such as adding a room or two onto an elementary school to handle all-day kindergarten, not having to go through this process will allow the school district and their architects to actually get the project done, designed quicker and out to bid. And the earlier you get out to bid, the lower the costs are going to be. If you're bidding in May for a project that has to start in June, you're probably going to pay a 20 to 30% premium over what would happen if you'd been able to bid 60 days earlier even or 90 days earlier. So there's an actual real dollar impact that's positive to the school districts if you approve this bill. So I would urge you to approve it and move it ahead as part of the overall package, and thank you for listening to our testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Bourgeois. Ms. Schwab.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I will be brief here. All three of these recommendations, Mr. Chairman, are rock stars. It was a phenomenal group to be part of, and Mr. Crow, who was just up here, was also part of that group. I served on that group, and it was one where we felt we were all pitching in and moving forward. And one of the easiest things we thought we could pass this year that made the most sense was this review and comment process. We spent, and Mark has been kind, our first meeting being kind of rebellious, saying, why do we have 16 points? Why are three of them dealing with sidewalks? Why in the world do we get in line for the department to review this? They say they want some new paperwork. We got to go back to the end of the line again, and pretty soon our season is gone. So it really consolidates that in today's language and standards, and it makes a lot of sense, Mr. Chairman, and I am very encouraged the committee is talking about this report, because in my mind, it's the last big thing we have in education that we need to tackle on funding. Because to be honest, to go out and ask the voters to redo the parking lots across the district isn't very appealing. And yet that maintenance is critical to every school district. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll end and answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Kelleher, any questions of the witnesses? And I'll ask if the department would like to comment as we're looking at changing that threshold. And we had your testimony by way of the joint hearing in general. But if you'd like to make a statement on this for the record. Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dahl.
And before Dr. Melcher goes, I just want to say that all of the things that we eliminated in terms of the points that we're bringing up to MDE are very important. to me that if there is some new construction, that locally, I think, rather than the MD, they can talk about bicycles and sidewalks and indoor air quality. I mean, those are very important, and I would think that any architect or community or school board worth their weight would make sure that those things are certainly included, and they would know much better than maybe MDE in terms of how those things are going to be affected. So just want to make that point, because
Thank you,
sir. Look at the list of things that excluded. Those are very important, but I don't believe they're required for the report. So,
thank you. Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The recommendations in this bill are consistent with the working group report. They were developed at the request of the working group by the staff in the department who work on a daily basis with the review and comment process. So they're based on the experience of those people. We don't believe there's any fiscal impact to the state to doing this. There would be some savings, I think, to the districts and some time savings for department staff who do this that would help move facility projects along. We don't have an official position from the agency management at this point, but we will get back to you as soon as we have that.
Thank you. Questions, Dr. Melcher? Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 2282? Well, very good. This was informational, Senator Dahl. I noted that it's in Senator Torres Ray's committee, but will evolve soon. Thank you very much. And we will move next to Senate File 1794, Senator Claussen, District 196, Transportation Hub. We'll be joined by Jeff Solomon, the Director of Finance and Operations at Rosemont Apple Valley Egan. And there is a fiscal note for that in the packet. Welcome, Senator Claussen.
Well, thank you, Chairman Wieger, and good morning, committee members. We'd like to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you this morning and present Senate File 1754. It's a bill to authorize lease levy funding for a secondary transportation hub within the Rosemont Apple Valley Egan Public Schools, also known as District 196. District 196 operates the largest self-run district fleet of school buses in the state, over 200 buses and contracts for an additional 35 buses from an outside vendor. The District Transportation Department employs approximately 250 drivers, chaperones, vehicle technicians, and office staff, and over 3.3 million miles are annually logged by District 196 school buses. The current transportation office is located in the southeast side of the school district, within the city of Rosemont, and was formerly a transportation hub for a trucking company. So it serves our needs very well in that there's a repair shop there. There was a yard for a number of vehicles that could be parked there, office space. So the facility has served the district very well for over 25 years and will continue to do so in the future. However, the population as a growing suburb has shifted, and the main population of the area now is further away from that transportation hub. And the district believes a $500,000 annual savings can be obtained by providing a secondary transportation hub more centrally located within the district. And with us today is Mr. Jeff Solomon. He's the Director of Finance and Operations for the Rosemont Apple Valley Egan Public Schools, and he will provide testimony and give greater explanation to our proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. Welcome. Solomon.
Good morning, Chair Wieger and Senators. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about Senate File 1794. My name is Jeff Solomon, and I am the Director of Finance and Operations for the Rosemont Apple Valley Egan Public Schools. As Senator Claussen mentioned, our district is the fourth largest in the state, serving more than 27,000 students in nine communities that cover 110 square miles in the South Metro area. We operate the largest self-run school bus fleet in the state with 230 daily bus routes that provide transportation to more than 20,000 of our students. From an efficiency standpoint, I'm proud to report that our district consistently spends less per pupil on student transportation than the average district in the metro and statewide. We currently have a transportation service and storage facility located in the city of Rosemont on the east side of our district. Our district is asking for increased flexibility regarding the building lease levy, which would allow our school board to utilize levy authority or lease purchase of an additional transportation hub located in another area in our district. The intent of establishing a second transportation operations hub is to reduce the mileage and the driver time cost to get our buses in the areas that they need to serve each day. The additional bus storage and maintenance space of this second hub facility would also allow our district to discontinue subcontracting of approximately 30 bus routes that are currently operated by Mid-County Bus Services. With our track record of efficiency, we have calculated and are confident that we can achieve significant savings by operating these routes ourselves. All totaled, we estimate that having a second transportation hub would result in annual operation savings of approximately $500,000, which we could use on classroom-related programs instead of transportation expense. Due to the timing of previous leases, which are set to expire in February of 2016, we estimate that we could fund the building of this facility and payment of the lease without any increase to our local school property tax. It's also estimated that the implementation of this savings to our district would result in savings to the state budget. And I believe that you have a fiscal note on this. And it's estimated approximately an annual savings of $150,000 per year due to the reduction of special education aid that would be paid our district. We are asking your approval of Senate File 1794 so that our district and the state can realize these significant annual savings. I thank you for the opportunity to present our rationale on this legislation, and at this time be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. May I assume the school board is in unanimous support of this on levy?
Yes, they are. We've talked about this possibility in work sessions, and they're very supportive.
Yeah, but there hasn't been an official action.
No, because under current law...
No, in support of this.
No official action in support of this, no.
Okay. If they could, it's good to go on record. It gets to be sensitive as we address levy at the local. We understand that. But usually it's good to have a strong resolution of support in support of the legislation, just so it's clear. So if that could be brought up at your next meeting.
Be happy to pass that on.
Thanks. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Solomon, concerning transportation funding for your school district, are you operating in a surplus or a debit?
Mr. Chair and Senator, we currently are operating on a break-even on our transportation. Now, transportation used to be funded separately, have its own fund balance so that you could monitor the ongoing either operation savings or deficit. We do account for it now. It is part of the general fund. Our school board asked that we continue to account for transportation in a separate account within the general fund so that we're able to monitor that. It is a break-even operations for us.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. I'm inferring from the request that you don't have the option to embark upon this project without specific permission from the state of Minnesota. Can you explain to me what's out there that keeps you from being able to do that?
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, yes, what doesn't allow us to do this is that the building lease levy authority through statute is very specific on what it can be used for. Basically, it can be used for classroom additions to existing K-12 facilities within 20% of the existing square footage of those. It also can be used for educational facilities that are outside of the K-12 spectrum, which would be geared towards our early childhood, adult basic education, and so forth. So right now, we do not have state authority to use building lease levy for this.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Collinson.
And Senator Weber, just to add, too, there is precedent that this has been done in other districts for other purposes that lie outside of Mr. Solomon's comments. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative or Senator Clausen or whoever, I'd like to ask you to explain to me about how this is tied in with the reduction in special education aid.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and Senator, we have a total transportation budget that is about $16 million annually. About $6 million of that is related to special education transportation. We're estimating, as I mentioned earlier, about $500,000 of annual savings to our transportation costs. And so the proportionate savings to special education transportation would be the estimated savings to the reduction in state aid supporting our transportation costs for special education.
That's quite a significant savings, and that's impressive. Thank you.
Further questions from division members? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 1794? And I would extend an invitation if the department would like to, particularly on the phrase in, at 1.11, resulting in significant financial savings. Maybe that's a common sense interpretation, but if there's any support or suggestions regarding that language as we will soon lay this over for possible inclusion. Dr. Melcher, would you like to provide some comment? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. We did do the fiscal note on this bill. We do not have an official department position on it. However, we do think it's very beneficial for school districts to look at ways of being more efficient and saving dollars, and when that benefits the state general fund as well, we look upon that favorably. Again, though, we have not done an official department review or taken a position on this at this time.
And Dr. Melcher, the phrase significant financial savings as opposed to financial savings, any suggestion on that for whoever would review the district request?
Mr. Chairman, I think the term significant financial savings is something we could work with. But, okay. Financial savings might mean a penny, so this would suggest that there is something that's more sizable than that.
Significant.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Very good. Thank you, Dr. Melcher. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? If not, thank you very much. Senator Clausen and Senator Johnson moves that Senate File 1794 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus finance bill. All in favor? Any further discussion? All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you very much, Senator Clausen, and we will
Senator
be meeting.
Committee.
We'll be meeting Wednesday and Thursday. And if I could ask Ms. Livingston, our committee administrator, if you have the agenda, if you'd like to just announce that for Wednesday and Thursday. I believe it's published, but we'll note that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wednesday, tomorrow, we're addressing the Senator Tomasoni bill and the Senator regarding the high school in northern Minnesota, and also the Senator Johnson bill on breakfast. And Thursday, there are four bills all related to location equity coming up. Yep.
And the following week, we have a couple of items that are timely scheduled, but have we formally announced that?
Tuesday.
Okay, so crosswinds, which was heard in policy, that'll be heard next week. And as we look at target information and deadlines, we're going to include as many items as we can. So that's what we have scheduled at this point. And we'll stay tuned. So we'll see you all tomorrow. The committee is adjourned.